You're listening to Mind Over Markets, a podcast on trading psychology to help you build a bulletproof mindset. Here's your hosts, George Papazov and Mark Borscht.
Hello, trade pros, and welcome back to another episode of the Mind Over Markets podcast with your esteemed hosts, myself, Mark Borscht, and
George Papazov from Trade Pro Academy. Super excited to be here. And this is episode 70, Marky.
Yeah.
Wow. Very excited.
We've made it to 70, and we've almost hit a huge milestone on the podcast. And we'd appreciate you guys if you do share this. You know, you can help us hit that milestone. We might do a little bit something special. Who knows? But in today's episode, we are going to be focusing the discussion on some of the strategies that traders can use to overcome that massive psychological barrier of letting profits run. All right. After all, you know, one of the golden rules in trading, if not the golden rule of trading, is cutting your losses quickly and letting your profits run. But the reality is that it's a lot easier said than done. And anybody that's been trading for any amount of time will more likely than not agree with that statement. It's easier said than done, but it's not impossible. Now, the concept of cutting losses quickly and letting the profits run, it makes sense from a logical, you know, intellectual and a financial perspective. All right. If you cut your losses quickly, you let your profits run. Logically, it makes sense that at the end of the day, you're going to have more than less. But like we said, when it comes time to actually executing on this, most traders fumble and they actually do the opposite. They cut their winners too soon and they let their losers run. All right. Now, before we get into, you know, some of the reasons why this may be the case, we're also going to introduce a little behavioral finance case study for you guys to see if you're in that same mindset that generally cuts losses, or rather cuts winners too soon and lets the losers run. But before we get into that, I want you guys to take a moment to reflect on your own trading experience, even the trades that you've done up until this week, all right? Maybe even the last week's trades. Take a look back through those and reflect. How often did you get out of winners too early only to sit on the sidelines while the market went to your take profit without you? How did that make you feel? Also think about the losers, right? As traders, we're gonna have losing trades. How often do you get into a trade, if it doesn't go your way right away, you say, I'm gonna give it a little bit more room to breathe. And you do that over and over until you're left with a loss a lot larger than you originally planned on, right? If you find that you do this reflection and that this is a common occurrence in your trading whereby you're taking profits too early and you're cutting, or rather you're letting the losses run, then today's episode is for you.
Awesome, Marky. Thank you. Before I get into that, I just want to do a fun little exercise. If you go to Google and type in proprietary trading and go to the image search, what do you see? You see a bunch of monitors with a bunch of people working together on a trading floor. What do they have that you do not? Screens, technology, information, faster access to news, a magical strategy? The answer is neither of these. In fact, in today's world, you could have access to the very same thing as professional traders. What separates them from you? They have each other. Professional traders know that this is a team sport. You have to join a winning team to learn how to win yourself. Join our community today and get started with trade ideas, education, analysis, accountability partners, and join a winning team once and for all. Visit us at www.tradeproacademy.com. And now, back to the show, Marky.
Back to the show. So at this point, we're going to do a little behavioral finance case study. And George, I'm going to have you be the participant because you've likely not seen this just quite yet.
It is not just likely, it is true. Yeah, I haven't seen this yet. I will gladly be the participant. I'm excited.
Perfect. So we're gonna talk through two types of scenarios. And the whole purpose behind this case study is to kind of identify behaviors, all right? Behaviors as it relates to finance. That's why it's called behavioral finance, all right? So
well played.
Thank you. In the first scenario, all right, and I want the audience to participate in this as well. You know, granted, you're doing it in a safe place, not while driving, but if you're doing anything other than driving or anything other than, you know, putting your life at risk, let's go ahead with this example. So in this first scenario, you're given $10,000, right, Georgie? I'm giving you 10K. And I'm asking you, as well as the audience, to choose between two options.
I choose to go to Louis Vuitton and buy a couple of hoodies.
Perfect. Not one of the options. Right?
Okay.
So your first option, I've just given you 10K. Now, your first option is you can either take option one, which is you're guaranteed to win an extra $2,000. All right. So I've given you 10K. Option one, you're guaranteed another $2,000. All right. Option number two, you're given a chance to flip a coin. All right. So you've got 10K and I give you a coin to flip. If the coin lands on tails, you get another $5,000. If the coin lands on heads, you don't lose anything, but you don't earn anything more. Which option do you choose?
Wow. So you're guaranteed 2K in the first one. On the second one with a coin flip, I'll get another 5,000, right?
If it lands on tails, you get 5K. If it lands on heads, you get nothing more than, you don't lose anything, nor do you win anything more than that 10K I gave you.
You know, even though I know this is set up to be a trick question, I would do option two.
Option two. Okay, perfect.
What would you choose?
Well, I'm the one making this case today, right? So I can't. It's a little bit biased what I would choose. Yeah. But let's ask the audience, all right? We'll reflect on this again. You're given 10K. Option one, on top of that 10K, you're guaranteed an extra 2K. Option number two, you get a coin flip. If the coin lands on tails, you get an extra 5K. If it lands on heads, you don't get anything extra, nor do you lose any of the original amount. All right, which do you choose? Now, Georgie chose option number two. All right, and most people will actually go for option number one. All right, and I know George, it was kind of set up that way, but that's why George is a professional trader. All right, most people are not professional traders, and as such, most people will lean towards option one. They're going to look to take that guaranteed win of 2K instead of taking on the additional risk of flipping a coin. All right, in that situation, you choose a guaranteed return when in a situation of gain instead of taking additional risk to take more profits.
This is very interesting, Mark, because the way you phrase this example, this is perfect, because the 2K isn't too much more, right? It's like it's a guaranteed amount, but it wasn't a large number. So it's like, yeah, I could just put this in my pocket. I love this example. I could see how you would be, if you're somebody who's looking for a guaranteed return, go to option one. I looked at it as, look, you could win another 5K or nothing. I got to pay tax on those Louis V hoodies somehow. So I need some extra money to make this transaction happen. This is cool, though. Great example.
There you go. So I want you guys to write down the option that you took. All right. If you chose option one for this first scenario or option number two. So again, if you chose option number one, it's siding with that of the majority. And what this is simply telling you is that in a situation where you are in a position to gain, all right, where you've already got some cash, this was a 10K example. Now you can increase that by taking a potential 50-50 coin flip, or you can take a lesser amount, but it's guaranteed, right? What would most people do? Most would go with option one. Let's move over to scenario two.
Oh, excited.
All right. So this scenario is a little bit different, but a little bit the same at the same time. Interesting. So in scenario number two, all right, I'm giving you 10K again. Right? And you've also got two options. Here's the difference in these options. I've given you 10K, all right? Option number one, you're guaranteed to lose $2,000. All right? Option number two, you're given a chance to flip a coin. If it's heads this time, you lose and you gain nothing. If tails, you lose $5,000. Which option do you choose?
Ooh. Jeez. Now you're messing with my head because you're guaranteeing to take something away, Mark. Jeez. Mm-hmm. So you get 10K guaranteed to lose two. So you're basically giving me eight. Or if it's heads, I lose and gain nothing. I just basically keep the 10. Mm-hmm. So that's two more that I'm guaranteed to lose. If it's tails, I'll lose 5,000. So that's 3,000 less than the eight. My initial instinct, and this is the answer I'm going to go with, is to take the 2K hair cut right there off the top. Give me the 8, mm-hmm. and I'll work with it. And now I'm just down to like one Louis V hoodie and I don't know, maybe a t-shirt. You know what's funny?
Maybe a t-shirt. Yep.
I don't actually own any Louis V hoodies. I'm just
free marketing.
Yeah, exactly. What am I doing? Louis Vuitton, you guys owe us some marketing dollars. I'll email you guys. I'm curious, what's a common one here on this response?
Interesting, huh? So let me just give the scenario again for the audience, just in case you didn't catch it the first time. All right. I give you 10K. All right. So you've got 10K in cash in your hands, but you've also got two options. Your first option, you're guaranteed to lose $2,000. The second option, you're given a chance to flip a coin. If it lands on heads, you lose and you gain nothing. Meaning if it lands on heads, you keep the 10K. All right. If it lands on tails, however, you lose $5,000 out of the 10,000. Which do you choose? So Georgie went with option number one. All right. Surprise, surprise. The majority of people will actually go with the second option in this scenario.
Huh. I'm different.
You're just built differently.
I don't know if that's a good thing. And you know what? I actually didn't see the response at the bottom. I have my page scrolled out just so it ends. I don't want to know what it was going into this.
Good.
Interesting.
So in the second scenario, most people will go with option number two. They'll take the chance of flipping heads or tails. Whereas in the first scenario, most people will go with the guaranteed gain. All right. So if you went with the second option here, you're choosing to take on additional risk in a situation of loss rather than a guaranteed loss. All right. And so what your choices should tell you about your behavioral psychology and your psychology as it relates to finance and money. All right. In the first scenario, you have cut your winner if you chose option one. All right. So where we talk about how most people, when they're actually in the execution moment of the trades and it's deciding whether I keep this trade on or, you know, do I take profits when I have them? In that first scenario, most people will go with option number one. And what that is, if you relate it back to trading, you're cutting your winners short. All right. And the reason for that is because in a state of gain, you're taking the guaranteed return instead of taking on additional risk to make that larger amount. Recall that in that first scenario, the guaranteed amount is $2,000. In the second scenario, all right, the return was $5,000, but you had a 50-50 chance. The interesting thing was if you lost that coin flip, you'd still have $10,000, right? You wouldn't lose anything, but you wouldn't gain anything.
Huh.
If it landed on, what was it? Tails, however, you got an extra $5,000. So you can see right there how most people would go for that guaranteed win. And if that was the option that you chose, more likely than not, you are cutting your winners short when you have them, right? The second scenario. In the second scenario, if you went with option number two, all right, which was the option to take a coin flip, all right, in the scenario where you're either going to take a loss, a guaranteed loss, a smaller guaranteed loss, or have the option to take a 50-50 chance of either losing nothing or losing $5,000, which is $3,000 more than the first option that was guaranteed, most people in that kind of a situation will go for the 50-50 chance. The interesting thing between these two scenarios is the first scenario is when you're in a situation of gain, whereas the second scenario is where you're in a situation of loss. So if you went with option number two in scenario number two, you're effectively running your losers, all right? Because you're not taking that guaranteed loss. You're taking that 50-50 chance that you're either gonna lose nothing or lose a larger amount. And this is the interesting thing about, you know, this little study. You know, granted, it's not completely original. We've curated it, of course, but the majority are likely to cut winners when in a winning position and to run losers when in a losing situation. And that's kind of what this case study embodies, right? So if in the first scenario you went with option one and in the second scenario you went with option two, likely the case that in your trading experience, you're going to be cutting winners short and you're going to be letting those losses run. And we have got to flip that around.
Huh. Man, this is fascinating. This is like, number one, it was really fun to go through these options with you. Number two, Marky, you know, this actually speaks so much more about psychology than just winning or losing, right? Because in scenario two, you're given 10K. Listen to the words. You're given 10K and have two options to choose from. Option number one, you're guaranteed to lose 2K. Do you know how my mind put that together? Because like what you hear and what you think are two different things, and that's all NLP. It's a, you're thinking based on your filters. You know, when you said that option number one, you know what I replaced lose 2K for? I'm walking away with 8. It's like I have 8K. Because you're giving me 10K, so you're guaranteed to lose 2. Okay, just give me the 8. I still walk away with 8,000 more, right, than I approach it with. So I think this is really interesting. It's because it's a perception of what is a loss to you, right? And I think we create losses in our mind that aren't actually there. And furthermore to this example that I found it more fascinating is how relevant that is to trading, right? And when you're in, and I know we're going to explain this, but those examples speak volumes. Like we just ended here and then roll the outro and people would get a ton of value out of this. This is really cool. I had one more thought to mention, but I didn't write it down because I don't have paper. I'm probably going to interrupt you in 30 seconds with it.
All good. So like that's the exactly what kind of Georgie mentioned. It's an interesting take and it kind of gets you thinking, right? Because most people, I think this is very reflective of, you know, I would say societal psychology as it relates to money, right? And so if you're getting into trading and you're experiencing this, you know, why is it every single time I have a profit, I'm cutting it quickly, but for some reason, every time I get in a trade and it's not working my way, I decide I want to give it a little bit more room to breathe. And this kind of gives you a little bit of insights behind the curtains, if you will.
It just hit me, Marky. You know what I realized about this exercise is I was doing this exercise from the framework of opportunity cost. Right, I think if you're in your life where you need money, you're going to go for guaranteed wins and then try to gamble your way out because you need the money, you trigger that lack mindset. But as I was listening to these examples in my head, I was just thinking, let me finish this bet so I could dump this in the market and turn it to more, right? It's like I have a high opportunity cost for capital. So from these examples, I don't want to walk away with the most. I want to walk away with the least risk situation with the most capital so I could put that to work because I know it could work for me. Rather than trying to scrape every penny out of this deal possible, play the percentages. You know what I mean? It's like, give me the capital the quickest way possible. The one with the least amount of risk. I'll take it. Give me the guaranteed loss of 2K. No problem. I'll take that 8 and I'll turn it into more because there's an opportunity mindset behind it. Right? So I think if you have a lack mindset, you would do the more running losses aspect. But I think if you're opportunity focused, you would look for the opportunity in this of how could I walk away with the most money, take the least risk because I have another source that generates more for me. So I thought that was kind of cool. It kind of speaks to the mindset of where you're at too, like a temperature check almost for your mind.
Yeah, exactly. And like if you kind of think about it, our natural instincts, and we've discussed this, you know, throughout the entirety of this, the podcast, you know, in many of the episodes, is that our natural instincts are actually the complete opposite of what's required in order to succeed in trading. And this gives you a little bit insight into why. First and foremost, number one, we, you know, as people, as humans, I don't know about you, but you know, this rings true for me. I hate to lose. You know, I'm a sore loser, if you will, right? But that's just kind of the competitive nature in me. The thing that you got to understand though is that majority of us, unless we've done actual psychological or mental work on our, you know, on our own selves, you know, self-development work, you're going to be conditioned to look to be right. And this is societal, societal norms, right? I'm not pronouncing this. Societal norms, right? Your upbringing, the entire upbringing, right? From childhood through whatever it is, grade school, elementary school, high school, you're graded on how right you are on exams. You know, you transition into the workforce. You think you'd be getting away at work doing, you know, being right 40% of the time? Nah, you'd be fired almost on the spot. You wouldn't even make it past your 3-month probation, right? And so our upbringing as a society is based on the concept of being right. And that does not serve you at all in the trading industry. So that's one of the things that, you know, one of the reasons why our psychology is kind of geared towards that of minimizing not minimizing, but the guarantees, you know? Whereas like Georgie mentioned, somebody that's more abundance focus, you know, opportunistic, they're focusing on risk adjusted return, right? It's not about, you know, what can I guarantee here? What can I guarantee there? It's about how can I get the most with risking the least? And I think that's very important.
And you know what, Marky, this kind of reminded me of something very interesting. Two things. One of it's fun. One of it's serious. It's still kind of fun. Is that I think a lot of this comes, the point number one, you know, what's required to succeed in trading is not what most people are equipped with. So they start the game sort of with the opposite skill set. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that boils down to the fact that in our life, we're taught that we're valued by someone else. And like you said, grades, work, performance reviews, yeah. Right? It's like we seek to know our value from external perspective. But if you think about it, trading is the constant, ongoing, in real time valuation of an asset. That's all you're doing. Is you're trying to value a market. Is it cheap? Is it not? That's what you're actually looking for when you're going to buy, a level where you think it's cheap enough that it's worth the risk of your capital. So I think if you're somebody who looks externally for your valuation and your value system, I think this is very important for you to identify. And this is an opportunity for you to work on it before you even start trading, because it'll make you a much better trader. If you're somebody who your value on something is more important than what other people value it as, you've already got the natural skill set to do really well in trading, right? Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what anyone thinks, because nobody knows where the market's going. And if you really think about it, nobody knows your value better than you anyways, right? There's so many assumptions and errors and potential to get that model wrong. So it's all, think about that in your head. Am I the kind of person that seeks value externally, or is it more important for me to value myself from an internal perspective? And that would be a really big clue as to how your trading journey will go, especially at the beginning.
Yeah, that's completely true. And just to kind of build on that, right, is like your external value will increase the more you value yourself.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's like a lot of people, like you said, you know, people often look for external validation to kind of get their ideas, but not ideas, to get their kind of validation about what they're doing is right or wrong. At the end of the day, it's an internal thing. And if you can focus on it internally and valuing yourself internally, that is going to, you know, that's going to reflect on the outside. And so, yep.
Yeah, my bad. And you're going to get the best entry too, right? Because when you're using internal valuation to make decisions, you'll be the first one on board. It would be the equivalent of somebody coming, like external valuation. The only way I could give you an example is this. So you bought Tesla at $10 a share and somebody comes up to you and says, "Hey man, have you heard of electrical vehicles? You know, you could buy Tesla now for like $700. Yeah, you could. I'm already long at 10. That's the thing with internal valuation, is because you are the one responsible for that decision. You know, there's no lag. You can make decisions quicker when you're doing them internally versus always seeking to find info. Because how do you get external value? You got to find information. Now you got to analyze the information. Now you got to decide how much you agree with it. Now there's a point where you could argue with that. And then by the time you get your external validation, the opportunity's gone. So, you know, this is super important. I know we didn't mean to dwell too much on this, but these are short notes, and I'm trying to stretch it to the hour.
No. I like that. And, you know, just before I kind of jump into the second part here on the instincts, I think that's important what you mentioned as well, you know, with regards to the internal valuation, because one of the other, I guess, side effects of that is accountability. Right. If you're looking for external validation, and let's say it's, "Hey, George, do you think this is a good place to get long?" George says yes, you get long, you take a stop. Now, guess what? It wasn't my idea that I used to execute that idea. It was George's. So the fact that it hit my stop, it's not my fault. There's nothing for me to be accountable for. It's George's fault. I shouldn't have listened to George. You know what I mean? And I think that's important as well, because that's what a lot of people tend to do, right? They sign up for signal services, give that a whirl. You know, how come these guys are posting, you know, every trade's going to profit, but I'm taking the same trades and I can't get anywhere? And, you know, it just kind of leads to that domino effect, if you will. And that's pretty much where I'm going to leave it, because we can go down a rabbit hole with that.
Well, I can't let you go on. I can't keep any leg. You know, this is why these signal things don't work too, Mark, because my idea might be your external valuation, let's say, and you follow the idea, but then every trade is like a coin flip, and maybe I'm doing the minus 2K guaranteed, but you're willing to risk it. Now you're taking risk on your own, and you end up losing more, and then you're like, oh, how come I'm down all this money, but this person isn't that's giving the signals? It's because that person's managing risk differently. So this is why it's important. I think that value, that example there just proved a lot of things, not just about your trading abilities, but also the importance of having your own approach and then generating trading ideas from within and then trading them yourself rather than looking external. Like, you should always learn. We had an Instagram post today. I don't know if it was your quote, but was it, if you were to start trading, the best place to start is to learn first? Did you see that one? Oh, it was genius. I didn't phrase it very well either, but you could learn from other people. You could take other information from other people, but you can't outsource decision making. This isn't something that you could outsource to an Indian call center and hope it works out well for you. You know, I mean, I don't know why I had to be that specific with that example. Yeah, I watched this movie on Netflix called Outsourced, I think, and that's what they did. And so that's what's fresh in my mind. But you can't outsource the most important part of your job. That's like a surgeon bringing you before your operation, telling you your chances and all this stuff. So, are you ready to go on the table? Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to fly you out to Cambodia and then it's going to be done there. I'm going to outsource the whole surgery. It's not why you showed up. So I think this is very important. I know we didn't mean for that to be a takeaway, but it is. Now I'm going to shut up and let you get the point too, because it's equally important.
Perfect. So a bit of a tangent there, but we're going to bring it back to, you know, the primary focus here, which is how to run profits like a professional trader. Now, the second thing of our natural instincts that really is detrimental for your success as a trader is ego. You know, we've mentioned ego. I want to say there was a complete episode we did on ego. You know, do you want to be right or do you want to make money? Right. And ego is such a big obstacle for people because you can see taking a loss as being wrong, and being wrong can be a hit to the ego, you know, and yeah. To the opposite side of that spectrum, you know, you can take profits early, right? You can cut your winners short, which is also an ego thing, right? Because even if you cut your winners short, you're still getting profit, which confirms you were right about the trade, and you're kind of stoking your ego on that front as well, right? So the two main natural instincts that are kind of opposite of what you need to succeed is, number one, not wanting to be wrong, and then number two, you know, they're kind of two in the same, is ego. You got to detach yourself from that ego, because ego is what's going to keep you in losers long and is what's going to keep you out of running those winning trades.
And keep you looking for guaranteed wins. You know what? Even worse, not guaranteed wins, because for ego, it's not about the money. It's looking to be right. And you'll waste all your money, all your savings. You'll mortgage your house. You'll do stupid things to fight for your ego just to try to be right. You'll lose enormous amounts of money to try to prove your ego right. I know this. Because I had this problem. I was an ego person. And it's like, when I started trading, I had a little bit of ego behind me. And, you know, I just realized when I started doing my journey into personal development and realizing that, you know, the world's been around so long and it'll be around for so much longer, hopefully. And I'm just a speck. Like, I'm so impermanent in the grand scheme of things. Why would I waste such a short period of time of my life on ego? And that was it. Just poof, right away, it disappeared. And I probably became a better friend. You know, non-coincidentally, that's kind of when I met the girl that would later become my wife.
Hey, there you go. All right. I know for, like, in my own experience, anytime there's been ego in my own trading, my cheeks have been clapped.
Yeah.
just clapped. And, you know, strategy goes out the door. Patience goes out the door, discipline goes out the door, and it's just about being right and proving the market wrong. You know, I'm shorting as the market's rallying, it's got to go down, nope, stop. Climbs a little bit higher, shorted again, it's got to go down, nope, stop. At some point, you got to realize, you know, I think it was Einstein's quote, you know, doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results is the definition of insanity, right? And that is how ego can really, really do some damage. for the trading and how it can keep you in losers, not even keep you in losers long, but it can keep you taking trades you know you shouldn't be taking. The unfortunate reality is you don't know you shouldn't be taking those until you've taken them, you've eaten the stop, you're calmed down after the market's closed, you're reviewing your journal, and you're saying, what the heck was I doing? Right? And I think that is where ego definitely plays a huge role. As it relates to your success or your, you know, failure in this industry. So the real question here becomes now that you guys have had a little insight into that behavioral finance study and you guys know some of these natural instincts, how can we go about reconditioning these instincts to actually serve us in our venture to trade consistently? So here are some of the strategies that you can use in order to learn to run profits like a professional trader. And guess what? We're not going to be giving you a strategy here. This has nothing to do with strategy. You know, obviously you do need to have a strategy in place, but in order to run profits like a pro, it's more a mental development, more psychological development that you have to make. And there's a couple things that you have to come to terms with before you can make these changes. So the first real strategy in order to learn to run your profits like a professional trader is, first and foremost, you've really got to accept at a deep level that losses are part of trading. The longer that you sit in this, you know, industry expecting not to take any losses, oh boy, you got something coming your way, all right? The first thing that you can do from a mental perspective is truly, truly accept that losses are part of the trading and that you are going to lose some trades. You're not gonna have to lose all of the trades, but a good chunk of the trades you will be losing. And the reason for this, and one reason why it's one of the strategies, is because most people don't actually prepare for this. You know, they come in with the expectation, you know, I've learned this strategy, I've got this indicator. If I take a loss, something's wrong with the strategy. Not the case, right? And so this is not accepting that losses are part of the trading is what keeps you is what keeps you cutting your winners too early, right? Because you're so scared of taking that big loss that the moment profit shows up, bam, you take it and you never really give it the chance to do what it's supposed to do, right? So first strategy, accept at a deep level that losses are part of trading.
That's fantastic. And I think I like that this is first, because this is the most important, I would honestly say, is, you know, my strategy with accepting losses, Marky, is a lot of people go more granular. So they'll dive deeper, like, you know, how can I, on the chart, avoid this loss? Where can I put my stop? I actually go wider scale. So I go higher up, further above where I'm at, and a grander view. And I say to myself, you know, loss is a part of life, all right? Each and every one of us have lost somebody in our life, right? You got to understand that if you're afraid of getting your stop loss hit on a trade, the bigger context here is your stop life is going to be hit one day. You know, like, what? You're going to lose everything at some point, right? Nothing you have is, it's funny because when we look at, you know, accumulating wealth and hoarding it, that's actually a lack mindset. Everything we have, we're borrowing. There's nothing in this planet that you're going to get to keep forever. Everything will be released, including energy, you know, and I know that's not trading specific. I know it's not out there, I know it is out there. You probably are visualizing me right now like Elon Musk on the Rogan podcast smoking a big fat doobie. But I'm not, okay? Completely sober. And I'm here to tell you that, like, you know, loss is not just part of trading. Loss is part of life. And everything great that you could ever borrow, because you can't own it, you're going to lose at some point. And so now that flips the whole thing to say, okay, what I'm doing in trading, you know, risking loss of capital, isn't that different in what I'm doing by living, right? And that kind of brings not an intuitive, but an integrated, a holistic approach to what it aligns with your purpose and mission. So yeah, if you can't accept that losing is part of trading, I give you one surefire way that you'll never lose a single trade, but you're going to have to email me your credit card. No, I'm kidding. I guarantee you, if you do this one thing, you'll never lose trading. What is it, Marky?
Don't trade.
There you go. Number two.
Yeah. Don't trade. There you go. Number two. Yeah, I just kind of want to build on that. You know, from my own perspective as well, I think when I kind of started, it was, I tried to, it felt like I was being so, so careful with taking the right trade that every trade I got into, that had to be the one. You know, that was the one that was going to be the home run. That's the one that's going to, you know, pay whatever, don't have to work anymore after this. And I was getting upset when it wasn't, when that wouldn't be the case, right? I've never been one to move stops or any of that fun stuff. I've always been disciplined in that sense. But from an emotional angle, you know, accepting that not every single trade is going to be that home run trade is super important. And, you know, even these days, sometimes, you know, if you get into a trade at a good position, you know, you're almost anticipating a bit of a bigger move. But nowadays, you know, if it doesn't go, it doesn't go. You know, I'm not really upset about it. You qualify the trade. You've got what you need to see. Perfect. You take it. You know, if it works out, it works out. If not, no, you know, no love lost. You move on to the next one. And I think that in itself was a big, big turnaround for me because, you know, I still have to work on my on letting my profits run. I've been good at taking my initial targets, but the trailing part of it, I still do need a little bit of work, a little bit of transparency for you guys. We're all on our own individual journeys. And that this to me is where I'm really working on right now. So I'm happy with the progress I made as far as, you know, accepting losing is part of the trading. And now for me, it's a matter of getting those winners, really maximizing the bit of the winners. And so some of the strategies that we're going to talk about today is actually what I'm going to be applying to my own trading. All right. So, you know, I've already got number two and number three down. Number four is the one that I really got to work on. And we're going to discuss that shortly. So number two, strategy number two, you got to battle test your strategy in order to be comfortable with running the profits. All right. And so, you know, this should really not come as much of a surprise. We always tell you guys, you know, you should know your numbers before you start live trading a strategy. And so one of the great recommendations from, you know, a highly rated book in the trading space as it relates to psychology is Trading in the Zone by Mr. Mark Douglas, RIP. And one of the strategies that he kind of suggested to helping you learn to run your profits is to actually trade a specific strategy for 100 trades before risking any live money on that strategy. And really the whole purpose behind that that little strategy was to journal each of those trades and to take each of the 100 trades the exact same way, no variance in those trades. And by doing this and keeping track of the results, you get data. All right, data that you're able to now look back at and know what that specific pattern you're trading, what kind of result it tends to get over a larger sample of trades. And the, you know, the reality is, unless you have that, it's going to be hard for you to let winners run, because every single time you got in, you're in profit, if you're using that, you know, the natural psychology that you're born with, you're going to want to cut those winners quickly. All right, because profit, you know, profit seems scarce to most people. So when they have it, they take it off the table, regardless of whether, you know, it's where they should be taking it or not, right? It's a lot easier to hold those runners when you know from your records that your trade setup will likely reach its target. And so that is strategy number two. You know, nothing crazy. We're not reinventing the wheel. You just got to put in the work. And that's the reality of this industry. If you're not willing to put in the work, then, you know, you're going to be cutting those winners short and you're going to be letting those losses run. I'll let Georgie handle these next couple ones.
I didn't know that Mark Douglas passed away. That's sad. 2016, apparently. Yeah. R.I.P. That's amazing. He was a legend. He did a lot of coaching in the industry. I got to be honest with you because I'm transparent. I didn't agree with a lot of Trading in the Zone in the book. I actually don't agree with the 100 trades either, personally. I just want to be congruent and be honest with you. I know, Marky. I don't want to say it. But what Mark is saying is you need data. I agree, right? I just think 100 trades is just like an absolute number. I like the concept. Let me say that. The concept is great. I just think that 100 trades is so arbitrary. It's the intent there is to get you to experience your strategy a little bit so you have an input or a feedback mechanism for how it's going, right? That's that's all it's trying to do. And I agree with that 100%. I just think that if you do 100 trades in SIM, you're actually automating a pattern. The trading is not risky, right? I just think when Mark wrote this book, there wasn't really a way to minimize your risk. Nowadays, there's products that give you 1/10 of the risk structure, right? So yeah. I'm sure RIP to him, if he was around, he would probably say, you know, put 2K of live capital for 100 trades and learn with skin in the game. Because even if your strategy is profitable, you know, you haven't learned how to make money with it. You've just got data and you've learned, you know, nothing about actually managing live capital. And you would learn more if you actually did it live. Now, I'm not saying, I guess what I'm saying is listen to our episode on why you shouldn't trade on SIM for too long, right? That's the only thing I'm afraid of with this point. But I like his intent and, you know, get some data, get some statistics to back up that you have an edge. If you don't have an edge, it doesn't matter how well you execute. You're not going to win in the long term, right? And the edge is as simple as, you know, you're using order flow. You're looking at institutional buyers, sellers. That's enough. And then now you got to quantify that. But you know, RIP to Mark Douglas. That kind of bummed me out. As you were talking, I had some good points. But in my mind, for some reason, they were replaced with, like, I wonder what my obituary is. I don't know why. I went dark, Marky. So
he went rogue on us.
Yeah. So let's go with number three. Strategy number three for learning how to run your profits as a professional trader is having a predefined stop and target for each trade. This one, I 100% am congruent with. I think this is important. You know, you got to know when you're going to cut the trade and when you're going to take your profit. Not when you're in the trade. That's the worst time to think about this. Before you're in the trade. Because no matter what kind of person you believe you are, you can't remove emotion for trading. You never will. I've been doing it for 20 years and I still get emotional sometimes. And so when you're emotional, it's the worst time to make decisions that could impact you financially or your health. So know where you're going to cut the trade. Where's your stop and where's your profit target before you get in? That way, it's no mystery once you're in. You're just executing. This prevents you from making emotional decisions. You know, remember, every time you enter a new trade and you've got money on the line with an uncertain outcome, your mind does become your worst enemy. You start to second guess everything. You question weird things. Like, I knew I should have listened to my mom and went to this degree, or I knew that this teacher was right. And you have no business thinking that while you're in a trade. So one of the best ways to deal with emotion is to limit the amount of exposure it gets in your day-to-day trading routine. And the way to limit that is to execute a plan. And the plan is simply know when you're going to stop out, know when you're going to take your profit. All right? Because without that, you're going to end up, this is how you say, oh, I'm down 4 ticks, the market goes 3, and your stop is 1 tick away. Like, let me move it a bit lower. Drops a little bit more. All right, let me just move it a little bit lower. And then you exit, and you're like, why did I do that? You're surprised because it wasn't part of your plan, but it's because you let your emotions overrun your decision-making, all right? Mm-hmm. So you can't remove emotion out of the trade completely because, unfortunately, you're a human being. One of the human being's weaknesses is emotionality. I look at that as a strength. You know, I was once of the belief that you shouldn't show emotion, you know, especially as somebody who's got like an Eastern European background and an Eastern European traditional father and, you know, and family. And if you think my father has a bit, wait till you meet my grandfather. Oh my God. You know, if you shed a single tear, even if it's at a funeral and he sees you, he's going to make you shed the next one. So it's like, and so you can't remove the emotion out of this, but what you can do is limit its impact, take away its power. And the way to do that is to have a predefined stop loss, predefined target. That way, when you get in, this is the cool part about this. When you get in, you know how much you're going to make and you know how much you're going to lose. And those parameters are already set. And that, in turn, removes the fear out of your decision-making and getting into trades. And, you know, this is kind of fused. This next thing I'm going to say and end it here is...
Yeah, I just wanted to, and before we go on to the next
point... I wasn't going to.
Oh, okay. Go ahead and then I'll jump back in.
No, but now you say something because I could build on it too. And this is malleable.
I like it. So, you know, just echoing what Georgie's mentioning here, Bo, when you have the predefined stop and the target for your trades, you know, what it does is if you kind of relate it back to that case study, right? You have that stop loss. That stop loss is your guaranteed loss. right? When you don't have a stop in place, that is where you're taking that 50-50 chance. And you don't want to be in that scenario where you're taking the 50-50 chance when it comes to the loss, right? And having that stop in there, it's equivalent to having that guaranteed, you know, loss of $2,000 from that example. Whereas you can either walk away with nothing or a $5,000 loss, right? So I think that's super important. And that's what I got to add here. Georgie, happy to hear this next thought.
Yeah, so this one actually, Marky, you've started doing this more recently. So this will be, I think they'll get more value out of you than me. I've been doing this for years. And this is almost like strategy 3B. Like it's an addendum to this one. It could almost be its own thing. Is that when you accept the stop of a trade and a take profit, you ultimately know the max you're going to lose. And at this point, because we're not talking about runners yet, the max you're going to make. So you can make more when you start running trades. But at the beginning, your initial parameters, your max loss and your max return. So that should give you some confidence in this, is you're controlling your risk. But here's what could give you even more confidence. Your stop isn't going to be the loss that you take. My stop on average, my loss per trade is lower than my stop loss amount. How is that possible? Scratching. And it's the art of looking at a market and saying, all right, I put the risk on. I don't like how the market is looking at the moment. You know, I didn't time it correctly. I feel like this is not a good trade. It looks like it isn't a good trade. Everything that got me in is we're losing those engines. They're not firing. And so I'm going to get out before my stop is hit. Now you get a free trade. And so this is why I'm confident in my approach, is because number one, my loss is contained. I know what my max loss per trade is going to be. And number two, I don't often take that loss. I could get myself out of it by looking at charts, spending screen time before I even realize that loss. This is how trading becomes less risky, in quotations, is you don't have to expose yourself to the full stop loss. And oftentimes, waiting for your stop to be hit while the trade's going against you isn't the right thing. You should get your ass out ASAP. Scratch. Take 3 ticks instead of minus 5. Save capital. And I think that's, you know, that's something Marky's implemented more in. And so I'd be curious to hear your thoughts too, Marky.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a recent implementation with trading a little bit more size, right? And it's definitely given me more confidence in trying ideas, you know, because with futures, oftentimes you'll have to give it an idea, you know, 2 or 3 shots before it actually gets going. And, you know, whereas before, if you guys recall, I mentioned, you know, if I was doing my analysis, I was super careful about putting on the trade because I wanted the trade where I risk the capital to be the one that goes. And so that was putting a lot of stress. I don't want to say it was stressful, but that was putting a lot of pressure on me to, you know, to maximize the setups, because more often than not, you know, if I did get it and it didn't give me the run that I wanted to, then the losses would eat up any profits that I made on those trades. But how it's kind of changed for me now is that I'm able to scratch out of it if it doesn't, you know, if the qualifiers, like you said, if the qualifiers disappear shortly after I get in and I don't, and my full stop hasn't been hit, perfect, I scratch it, and then I can look to give it another shot or another 2 shots. The one thing I'm still having a little bit, you know, coming to terms with is scratching myself out of good winning trades.
Mm-hmm.
But that just comes part and parcel of it, right? You can't expect to scratch yourself out of a full stop each time without giving up some potential upside. And it's just a fine balance that I'm also still working on developing. But, you know, scratching it and making sure to maximize those winners, you know, that's kind of the journey where I'm at right now, and finding success with it, but always work to be done in order to develop. And, you know, this next strategy here that we're going to talk about, number 4, this is kind of the way that I'm applying it now to kind of get myself more comfortable with scratching it, trying a trade more, you know, once or twice or even 3 times at most, and looking to capture the runners, right?
Because yeah,
we know what positions we're trying to get into, but if you're trying to get in on full size and maximize it, that's very difficult to do, you know?
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me, you know, might be a little bit too soon to talk about this, but it kind of reminds me of like the GameStop thing, right? Where people are like, you know, look, it went all the way from $20 to $483.
And the question that I asked them is, you think you'd be holding from $20 all the way up to $480? Very unlikely that, you know, you'd be able to run it the whole way, right? Professional traders, they take it level by level. You look at any trader, you know, if you're saying, all right, GameStop's going to go from $20 to $480, you know, they're going to look at levels. It's not going to be a straight line up, right? It's going to go 20 to 40 to 80, whatever it is. And they're going to look to take profits along the way. And that kind of segues nicely into this fourth strategy here, which is to start small with and use runners. All right. And so this is kind of the strategy that I'm using now to get a little bit more comfortable with extending my take profit past my original level, right? I've never had really an issue with taking my default take profit, but it's the running it that I've always kind of not struggled with, but it's the thing that can take me to the next level, right? I'm a good trader, but I can be a great trader if I get this thing under control. And that's basically to take on a trade with a portion, all right? So let's say, you know, I'm trading around threes to fours. Okay. And so if I'm trading threes to fours, what I'm going to look to do is get paid on my full take profit on the first two contracts. Right. So I like to look for, you know, my default bracket is 6 tick stop loss trading the ES futures with around 12 ticks on the take profit side. Right. So if I'm on two or if I'm using threes or fours, what I'll do is on the first two, I'll get paid at the initial, which is 12. And then on the third one, I like to leave the runner. All right. And so on the third one, what I'll do is basically if I get paid on the first two, that third open position, right, I can take the full stop loss on that because the first two contracts were paid. So that lets me sit in the trade with effectively no risk, but it allows me to, you know, to be a little bit more patient with it, give it more room to breathe. And, you know, I've been doing that so far, you know, these last couple of weeks, and I've been finding pretty good success with it. And just really looking to build on that. And really the idea behind this strategy where you're starting small, you're getting paid on a good chunk of your initial position where your initial take profit is, and then using that runner. The beauty of that is if you take that trade and let's say you try to hold it all out from, you know, where you enter to that extended take profit, there's always going to be that internal dialogue screaming at you to get paid because what if the market reverses? You know, and so the number one way to kind of battle that, first and foremost, battle test your strategy, you know, and the second way to do that is to get paid on a portion of it where your initial profit is. And so that way that internal dialogue, it almost kind of mutes itself, right? Because you've already been paid, even if the market rolls over at this point, you know, you're still up, right? So you're effectively removing the risk. But it's like that example of that first scenario where you're in a win situation because you're already up from your initial trades. Now you're taking that 50-50 coin flip with that runner to see if you can get that extra 5K instead of locking in that guaranteed 2K. And yeah, that's basically what I got on that.
Man, in the narcotics distribution industry, drug dealing, a runner is a person who takes the product, runs it to the customer, collects the cash, and runs it back to you. For a cut, you're going to get less money, obviously. In trading, it's the same thing. You know, it's like the thing about the runner is that you have no risk. If the runner gets booked on their journey, it doesn't go back to you. It's all hearsay. There's no connection. You're not at the scene. You don't have the cash. You don't have the product. You can't get pinned with anything. This is a horrible example because most of the runners are the young kids who end up getting charges and getting their whole life ruined before they even know what's up. But in trading, your runner is the same thing. It's a risk-free. This is where the money's made. I guess this is what I should have just said.
Yeah.
This is where the money's made. Like the reality of what you think professional trading, what you think professional trading is, you know when to get in and you know when to get out. You never lose and you make big money without any risk. The reality of trading is you have no idea when to really get in. There's no certainty. It always feels risky. You don't really know when to get out because that's not up to you. That's the market. If you don't know where the market's going to go, how are you supposed to know when you're going to get out? But what you do have is the ability to get paid on a partial position and leave the other one on and let it ride with the market. Maybe that means 30 points. Some days it means 200 points. All right. Some days it means an additional 2-3 points. Other days it means you get stopped out. And in our trading room, we say, hey, this is not a day to be running. This is a day full on, full off, get paid. If you want to leave a runner, you know, be less patient with it, take it off. And then the reality of professional trading is your win rates are lower. You would be shocked at how low win rates are for professional traders in the industry because they scratch a lot. I would say that a good 50 to 60% of the traders that I know, 50 to 60% of their orders are scratches. Look at their commission. You're like, okay, so you did 100 trades. You only got paid on 40. The other 60 were scratches. And that kills your win rate because why does it kill your win rate? Because, you know, if you take a minus one tick, it's the reality is it's not a big loss. But the system doesn't know that it's a loss on the P&L. And so that's how with a 40% win rate, you could drive a Ferrari. All right. And, you know, I don't really care about win rates because who cares about wins? The ego. Right, Marky? Win rate is an ego thing. It's a metric of how right you are, of how right you perceive yourself to be. Because it's perception and reality are always different. All right. And so this is what I want to mention is that the money is made on the runner. And the beauty of the runner is you have risk-free return. And the other beauty of it is you might make less than you want to on the trade, but on the runner, but you might make more than you ever imagined on this one trade. And you have to leave that up to the market. That's the market's decision. It's going to take you for a ride wherever it's going. The question, how big is the ride going to be? I have no clue. And so this is why it's a variable income business. Some days there's really a lot of volatility. Runners work well. Other days it's a chop fest and in a zone and your runners never work. Mm-hmm. And so I talked to a... Sorry, go ahead, Mark.
That was yesterday.
Yeah, and then today's the difference, right?
So like yesterday, for example, I'm sorry to cut you off there, G. Yesterday was a difficult day to run them. You know, I was trying to... I think there was two trades where I could have... I tried to run it. You know, I got paid on the first two, and then the third one, I think the third one got paid at like plus two ticks, you know?
Yeah.
And it was just like, and then today, for example, today's one of those days where, you know, if you get paid on the two, where did it go from? It went from like the 3820s up to, I think it even, did it get through 3900 or the 3900s?
Yeah.
I don't even know. I had technical difficulties today.
Your charts were working.
Yeah, literally the worst day for my charts not to be working after yesterday. But, you know, today was one of those days where you can put a runner on and you have a good chance of making, you know, 20, 30 points. And so what's interesting to note is that, you know, most people think, you know, the traders that are consistently profitable, they're just catching these things on the low ticks and running it. The reality is, you know, we're just taking base hits, you know, singles, doubles, and the runner is the one that gives you that home run, the grand slam. But the reality is, how often do you see a grand slam?
Yeah, right? Exactly.
How often do you see a grand slam? And if you're trying to position your career in a way that every single trade is going to be the grand slam, you're going to get cut real quick. You know, you got to look for singles and doubles. The only way to get a grand slam is to get the bases covered, right? The bases covered, and then you get that home run. And that's what you're doing by taking profits on the initials. You're covering the bases, and then that last runner is the one that you go out for that grand slam. Apologize to anybody who's not familiar with the baseball terminology, but I figured that was a good example.
It's a great example, Mark, because the runner is where the money's made. Right. Mm-hmm. Your job is get yourself in a position to get paid, reduce it and eliminate your risk, put a little bit of money in your pocket and leave it on the field to see what it does. You know, you're not a player. You're a coach. You're kind of coaching your contracts. It's like you three guys. All right. Do your thing. Make the money. Bring it back to me. And you just go for it. You know, just go and you sit back with popcorn and you watch. Let's see what this guy's going to do. Exactly. Right. It's like it's kind of, I don't know what the right word for it. It's a little cowardly, but trading isn't. If you're trying to be a superhero, good luck. There's probably other jobs for you. It's probably an ego instinct you're trying to fulfill. But trading is not a be a leader type of market. It's you got to be a good follower and damn near a coward. Sorry to burst the bubble. Runners is a great way. So just to recap it, these are the strategies. Four of them is accept the losses that are part of trading. Battle test your strategy. You got to have an edge. And so this is where the education is important. You know, of all these four, this is where education helps the most. Number three, have predefined stops and targets for each trade. And number four, start small and use runners to get the profit really going for yourself. Those are really four things you could do. And I just want to bring up one last thing here, Mark. You mentioned on scratching, you were saying that you would scratch, and then sometimes when it goes back in your direction, if it's a winner, if it would have been a winner, mm-hmm. it builds a little bit of emotional tilt, right?
Yeah, it's a bit of a piss off.
Yeah, it's
which is tilt.
Yeah, I had it and I let it go, right? That's mm-hmm. kind of. So, I mean, to the people wondering how to deal with that, number one, you didn't get out because you thought it was going to go up. So you got to understand that now that it's gone up, it's easier to beat yourself up in the past, but you can't beat yourself up for decisions you made with information that you didn't have at the time. It's just not possible, right? So that's one thing. That's psychological. The second thing is there's a step two to this. So whenever you're scratching, step number one is scratch. Right, and once you master scratching, then you get to step number two, and that's getting back in at a higher price. So if you're looking for a long trade, let's say you buy it. I don't know. Let's give a real example here on the S&P. This is recorded on March 11th. We made a push to all-time highs. Let's say you got long the 21s on S&P, the futures, and you got, you scratched it, and that was pretty much the low tick almost of the day. Mm-hmm. So let's say you scratch that trade. Okay, so it goes up 10 points, and now you're pissed off. You're trading at the 21, you go to 01. It broke that resistance. The next part of that is getting back in. And so here's the thing. The cost of scratching a trade that would have been a winner is you're going to have to pay a higher price for it. It's really damaging to your psychology after you scratch to try to buy it at the same price. So you get back in at the same level, right? Or even cheaper. That's the worst. If you scratch out of a trade and it drops and you're like, I'm going to buy it because it's cheaper, ask yourself, why is it cheaper? Maybe there's a reason the price is dropping. You don't want these things cheap. So the scratching process is twofold. Number one, scratch whenever there's doubt. All right. Number two is getting back in, sometimes at a less favorable price. However, if the market's gone up since you scratched out, you missed the profit, but now you have the information. It just validated your idea. What you were looking for to happen did happen. Therefore, now it's a higher probability move for it to continue, especially if you got good levels. So I never mind scratching out of one that would have been a winner. Because I say to myself, you know what? I scratched the winner. I could have made some more money. Now I have the information that confirms it was a winner. And now I'm going to hit it bigger with lower risk. And so that's kind of the mindset you want to take into your trading. I like this one. We talked a little bit more in depth about the trading strategy stuff. But that's what I got, Marky. These are great strategies. Thank you for putting these notes together. And for also for... doing a little game at the beginning. I don't think people realize how much work Mark does for these podcasts. Mark is like the podcast man, and I just go on here and I just say a couple things, and then he's just like, let's get back to the show notes.
All right, Georgie, let's get back on track.
Yeah, there you go.
I appreciate it.
So for everyone listening, a big shout out to Mark. Send him some positive vibes. Keep him in your meditation. Keep him in your positive thoughts and spirits. He puts a lot into this. So we got to thank you for this, Mark. Episode 70, and this is your first thank you. These are the working conditions of this company called TradePro.
We're not doing this for praise, that's for sure.
That's for damn sure.
That's for damn sure. But that's going to be the perfect way to kind of wrap up this episode. Appreciate you guys. It's been over a year that we've been doing these episodes, and I think we've gotten to a point where we've got a great foundation of the psychology part done, and we're kind of looking at ways that we can keep the content relative, and we're kind of curious to hear from you guys what you want to hear next now that we've built this foundation, right? So if anything, you guys can, you don't have to send your praises over to me, but what I would really appreciate is if you guys can comment, podcast at Trade Pro Academy, just send a little email in there what you'd like to hear next, some of the ways that we can help you guys progress on your journey to becoming a consistently profitable trader. So that's going to be everything for today, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. As always, outside of the feedback, if you guys can, we'd appreciate if you can jump on iTunes, just throw in a rating and a review. We read all of them, even the ones that might not be as positive. Everything is taken into account. We're really here, at the end of the day, TradePro values are that we care, and hopefully that's reflected with, the content that we're providing you guys in this podcast. So until next time, everyone, good luck and good trading. This is my sign off, and George's, take care.
Thanks for listening to the Mind Over Market podcast. You can find us at tradeproacademy.com.